Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson on a historic week in California politics. This city hall scandal at LA that became a national story, city council members caught on tape using racist language against a whole bunch of groups, and it's really upended the entire city. A little later, we'll talk about the midterms and Nathan Hochman, candidate for attorney general. But let's begin with that scandal. The story first broken by the LA Times and Knock LA. Gustavo Arellano of the LA Times is one of the authors of that original story. LZ Granderson, columnist for the LA Times, has written about it extensively as well. Both of them with us in studio this week to talk about it in depth. Let's start with Gustavo and asking him about the backstory with all this. Where did this recording come from? And what was the motivation to release it now, a year later?
A month ago, this recording pops up on Reddit with this cryptic remark saying, like, you know, you hear how, you know, paraphrase to how politics are, especially with labor, then you actually hear the audio, labor is corrupt, labor is wrong. Then it gets taken down. Then about last week, an anonymous Twitter account pops up, tweets it out to some folks around, you know, around Southern California, but my colleague David Zanziner. So then they get the audio. Sunday morning, I'm about to go into the shower. They ask me, hey, can you hear some audio, the Spanish bits, you know, just because we know there's some bad things going. I'm like, oh, God, I got to put on my clothes. And my entire Sunday was just, you know, I had to go get brunch at one point. But in terms of who leaked it, that is a big mystery. I personally think it is someone that got disillusioned with labor. And Los Angeles Magazine actually had this fascinating theory that it was council member running for council, Hugo Soto Martinez, who has had issues with the L.A. Labor Fed. Of course, he completely denied it. But that's what I'm hearing, that it was someone within labor that wanted to embarrass L.A. Labor Fed President Ron Herrera, just started to record conversations here and there. They did not expect something like this. Like, the target was Ron. It wasn't Nury Martinez, Gil Cedillo, and Kevin DeLeon. They're just collateral damage. But why now? Once they got the audio, when are we going to release it? When is it going to be the most effective? October surprise.
Wow. And right before the election. And how crazy is it to think that Ron Herrera was the focus of all this and not the council members as well? Because this conversation happened at a labor building, which makes sense that there might be other people there from labor that were listening into this conversation.
Yeah, if you know labor, the battles between labor, the progressive wing, the radical wing, the conservative wing, and the trade wing, it's House of Dragons. It's House of Dragons meets Games of Thrones meets whatever the prequel with Jon Snow is going to be. It is bad, man.
LZ, I'm curious for your sort of initial reaction to this, because we know in Los Angeles there has been this history of brown versus black political battles over the years, and this kind of takes it to a new level.
Well, my first question is, did you ever get that shower in?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Good. You know, it's not just in politics. It's in various aspects of life where you have minority groups fighting for power within a municipality, and they tend to infight as opposed to look at being a coalition. And I think this is just another example of that. So whether it's Los Angeles, Chicago, where I've lived, New York, where I've lived, I grew up in Detroit, I've seen this repeatedly, that minority groups fighting for power will infight versus looking at the larger picture. With that being said, my initial reaction was, this is awful. And I, being quite honest with you, I'm still really, really sad. I was at the Lakers game the other day and was just kind of looking around like going, who would say that about this beautiful city with this wonderful diversity? Isn't this the goal? And yet, you know, you take one step away from the spotlight and into the shadows and you see a lot of the ugliness you will see in other parts of the city where perhaps that's not the goal.
Yeah. And not to excuse any of it, but like if there was an obsession with one group, you'd say like, okay, you're just your run-of-the-mill racist, whatever. But she and others just fired off on so many
right.
groups. Like, as I was listening to the
groups
audio.
Groups that they've worked with, by the way.
Yeah. as we're all listening to the audio, you're like, oh my gosh, really? Oh my God, like it just right. got worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, and LZ, in your column, you reference one of my favorite shows, which is Hamilton. One of my favorite songs from Hamilton, which is The Room Where It Happens, where Aaron Burr is desperate to get behind closed doors into the room where it happens and political power is distributed. Here's a clip from Disney Plus.
The room where it happens.
sorry, I wish we could just play Hamilton all day. But it turns out, when it comes to Los Angeles, you may not want to be in the room where it happens. I mean, what does this say about what that room looks like?
Well, it says a lot. And I don't think there are a lot of people left in society, at least not in American society, that's totally shocked that backroom deals and some negativity and vulgarness are coming out of backroom meetings like this, the room where it happens, right? The language, I think, is what's really shocking us, and how people talked about people shocked us. But the purpose, I don't think, necessarily shocked us. And the reason why I chose to use that particular song was, one, to talk about the room where it happens, mm-hmm. right? That was a room in which political dealings were trying to unfold. But the other reason why I did it was because of Aaron Burr. What is one of the first things he says to Hamilton is, talk less, smile more. Mm. Don't let them know what you're for or what you're against, right? Is that not Kevin DeLeon?
Ooh.
Who was in this room where it was happening, not saying the awful things, right, that Martinez is saying, but appears to be
even have
talking
that grievance,
less,
the smart, wanting, like, I want more, and why
exactly,
don't people acknowledge me?
Exactly.
That's
so I chose that
one.
For a very specific reason, because I thought he reminded me of Aaron Burr in the sense of, he may not even agree. And when you look at all the things that he's done in his career, there's a lot of progressiveness there that makes you wonder, does he believe all the things that she was saying? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter because he didn't come out against it.
He didn't come out against it. And you write about the fact that often Latinos are their own obstacle to political power, because right now, Latinos have the political majority of people in Los Angeles, majority of people in California. And we're at this inflection point for Latino power.
We have been talking about Latino political power in Southern California for 40 years. You've had some council members, yes, Antonio Villaraigosa. You have now Alex Padilla from the San Fernando Valley being a U.S. state senator. But still, until this, the L.A. City Council, not even a third of the council members were Latino in a city that's 50% Latino. And it's so easy to hate on, the Republicans, or like Kevin saying, the white liberals are more dangerous to us in Orange County. But no, you have to reflect on yourself. And if you know your Latino political power, there's so many tribes or so many, groups, clans, houses, whatever you want to call them, that they're always fighting at each other. And if you hear the audio, they're talking trash on Antonio Villaraigosa, at this point, the exalted, saintly ex-mayor of Los Angeles. I know. In retrospect, wouldn't we want to have someone like Antonio instead of Eric Garcetti right now? I think he would have been better at sort of calming things down. And so there's all these petty grievances that are going to defeat you. And that was, even with the quote-unquote apologies that Gil, Nuri, and Kevin did, there's no self-reflection. It's just all self-serving.
Do you think that this puts Latinos in a worse position going forward?
Oh, yeah.
In terms of playing into stereotypes that maybe white people, black people, other people think, is this what they're saying about us behind closed doors?
What have we been talking about in California for the past 25 years from the conservative side? Mexicans are taking over. Mexicans, when they're in charge, they're going to start quashing other groups. Mexicans, when they're in charge, they're just not only going to do it for themselves. And here you have three of the most powerful politicians, period, in Southern California talking exactly like that. I'm already hearing from folks saying, I can't trust Latinos anymore, flat out. Like, I was doing a Twitter Spaces with our colleague Erica D. Smith, another columnist at the Times, and a woman who has an Afro-Latina daughter, she's from Africa, she's like, I don't know if I could trust Latinos right now. And I told her, you have every right to feel that. It is our responsibility as Latinos, especially Latino leaders. And they've been doing that. I'll say that much. They've been doing that to step up and say, yes, this is part of what we are. We're working at it. We have to fight it. But we cannot fight it without, frankly, getting condemnation from other people and then ourselves reflecting and fixing it.
And that's the part, not to cut you off, but that's the part that really hurts, because there is a legitimate gripe, which is the reason why I wrote mm-hmm. the column. The representation of power, not just in Los Angeles, but in the country, isn't just. And the Democratic Party, which likes to tout itself as being the party of the, people
inclusion.
Of color and inclusion and et cetera, they've been somewhat slothful in addressing that issue. But if you look across the nation, this isn't just a Los Angeles story. These are two of the most powerful, or three of the most powerful Latinos in the country when you think about the economic power of California and Los Angeles. So I put this on the same level as if you were to hear a congressperson speak out of turn like that. And I think we need to be thinking about this in that way.
So, and one of the key issues that they were talking about was redistricting, right? This idea of who gets to vote for who where. In California right now, on statewide elections, we have an independent redistricting panel. So it's not politicians drawing the lines. But in Los Angeles right now, it is. And we talked with Councilmember Marquise Harris-Dawson this week on Fox 11 Los Angeles when he joined us. And he says that changes are coming when it comes to redistricting after this. Take a listen.
I think we were headed towards redistricting reform with or without this scandal because the last process left us such a bad taste in everyone's mouth, even without knowing about this tape. I think we'll absolutely have it now.
So how do you think, LZ, city politics, state politics changes after this?
Well, this is a good first step. Of course, you have to then ask yourself, well, then who's the independent committee, right? Like, you can do this until you're blue in the face. But this is a good step in knowing that we need to get this out of elected officials' hands, right? I think, secondly, what I would like to see is a statewide conversation. Because this issue, as I wrote about, is only going to continue to escalate. And there are moments when you listen to the audio, again, going back to Kevin DeLeon, who specifically says, you know, we don't have to worry about the Trumpers supporters in Southern California, but the white liberals in the LA Times, people like us, right? So what they're sensing and what he is saying is that this has been an issue for both liberals as well as Republicans. Nothing's changing in terms of demographics, except there's going to continue to be movement there, and we need to have a mature adult conversation. And I would like to see the leaders, the top leaders on both sides, but certainly the Democrats who claim to be the leaders of people of color, need to have a larger conversation about this, because you can't leave this as a local story because it's not a local issue.
Yeah, and Gustavo, this happens in the midst of an LA mayor's race where people are voting. What a challenge for whoever wins the mayor's office. But I'm curious, how does this impact voting? Does this make people say, wow, this is really important, I want to have my voice heard? Or does it make people say, it doesn't matter, they're all corrupt, I'm out?
I'm seeing right now more people talking about politics than really ever before. Even the Trump era, you're like, ah, Trump, whatever, like, make him out to be a boogeyman. But when it comes to politics, local politics, even in Orange County, people are talking about it. People are asking me, my cousins are texting me, what's going on? So I do, and one of the questions they're asking, what is redistricting? So there is that interest now in the process of how to make it. But of course, with this election, will this boost out turnout? That's going to be the interesting thing, because if people really think, we need to get rid of the status quo, Caruso wins. If people say we need a unifier, and I think we need both, by the way, then it's going to be Karen Bass. So I don't know who it's going to help or hurt. It doesn't either.
Lastly, most important thing for healing going forward, LZ?
Listening. You know, we talk a lot, but I think people, again, going back to the elected officials' leadership, needs to listen to the people a lot more, need to listen to the purpose of the meeting wasn't to throw slurs around. The purpose of the meeting wasn't to disparage, you know, LGBTQ people or anyone. The purpose of the meeting was about solidifying Latino power in the city.
At the expense of Black power.
At the expense of Black power. You can have an equitable display of power of the Latino population in this area without Black erasure. And it's about having the ability to listen to one another to see how we achieve that.
Our thanks to Gustavo and LZ for that important conversation. Now to the race for Attorney General. Rob Bonta is the attorney general. He was appointed by Gavin Newsom. He hasn't won statewide yet. He's considered the favorite in this race. His Republican opponent is Nathan Hochman, former U.S. attorney, who is now trying to be the attorney general of the state. He joined us in studio this week. Here's our conversation.
Welcome to The Issue Is. Good to have you back on the show. Good to have you in studio for the first time.
Great to be here.
Thanks for being here. Okay, so let's talk about you, because I don't think this race has gotten enough attention. Tell people a little bit your quick bio, who you are, why you want to do this job.
Sure. Lifelong Californian. I was a federal prosecutor, went after narcotics traffickers and gang members. Then I was appointed by President Bush to run the U.S. Department of Justice's tax division as the assistant attorney general, went after tax cheats across the nation for over a year, then came back to Los Angeles, and I've been a defense attorney, a civil and appellate litigator, and the president of the L.A. City Ethics Commission.
And now you're running for attorney general. You're running against Rob Bonta, who was appointed by Governor Newsom when Javier Becerra joined the administration. We've asked Rob Bonta to debate you on this show, the California statewide show, and he's denied our invitation, denied every invitation to do a TV debate with you. So we guess we got to do it this way. What do you think is the biggest single difference between you and Rob Bonta?
Sure. And this is the reason that Rob Bonta is scared to debate me. He doesn't want the facts to come out about the difference in our experience, nor the difference in our agendas. In fact, I told Rob Bonta if he wanted to debate in his kitchen after dinner with a Zoom camera running, I was game for it. But what he didn't want the voters to hear is that I have 30 years of criminal justice experience as a federal prosecutor, a U.S. assistant attorney general, and a defense attorney. And Rob Bonta had 0 years, and I mean 0 years of law enforcement experience before he got the job. Rob Bonta has enacted, along with his buddy and friend George Gascon in L.A., the most pro-criminal agenda of the California Attorney General's office in the last 50 years. And my agenda is partnering with the police, not just treating them as the enemy, funding police departments rather than defunding them, and ensuring that all crimes have proportionate consequences.
Bonta did endorse George Gascon in his race for L.A. County District Attorney. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about the big story of the week in California, and specifically here in Los Angeles, which is this racist tape that's leaked. They're talking about redistricting. Rob Bonta says he's opening up an investigation to look at whether any laws were broken. What do you make of that? How do you read that? And how would you handle that if you were Attorney General?
So what I would do is actually have the qualifications and experience to lead that investigation. When I was a federal prosecutor, I led over 100 complex investigations. Rob Bonta has never led an investigation. I would be able to bring the resources of state, federal, and local to actually look if violations have occurred, whether or not we actually have to do something with redistricting. And I heard in your earlier segment, you know, it's the room where it happens. Where the room where it happens should be the courthouse. That's where justice should actually occur, but you need someone who's actually been in that room before. Rob Bonta has not been in that room, and I've been in that room for over 30 years.
Let's talk now about George Gascon. He's a DA in L.A. County. There are other progressive prosecutors across the state as well who are allied with Rob Bonta. I know you say if you're in there, you're going to take a different approach. What specifically does that mean for the people of California if you're in there and say George Gascon does something? How do you react?
Sure. What people don't realize, but they have to realize for this election, is that the California Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer of the whole state. That means you're basically the boss of every district attorney, including George Gascon. And here's what I vow. On day one, if I'm the California Attorney General and I get voted in on November 8th, January 3rd, I come in. The first week, I'm coming into Los Angeles. And I will have the power to remove George Gascon from any case in which he is not doing his job. And I actually will exercise that power. Rob Bonta is a buddy and ally of George Gascon and will do nothing. So all hope is not lost for the people who wanted the recall of George Gascon. If they vote for me as California Attorney General, come January 3rd, we can start bringing justice back to L.A.
But what does that mean, not doing his job? Because he was voted in by the people of Los Angeles. They had an opportunity to recall him. That did not qualify for the ballot. Who interprets that? What do you mean by not doing his job?
Well, what I mean by it is safety and security, plain and simple. If you can get arrested in the morning and not have any cash bail, which is George Gascon and Rob Bonta's policy, and be out by the afternoon, what we're having on the streets is criminals telling law enforcement, when they get arrested, I'll see you tomorrow. If you like a situation where the gun enhancement, if you use a gun, is not being charged by George Gascon or, again, countermanded by Rob Bonta, again, if they think that makes us more safe and secure, I couldn't disagree more. So when George Gascon has engaged in blanket policies, that's where I have an issue with him. That no matter how bad the person, no matter how bad the crime, he has a blanket policy not to prosecute certain crimes. I disagree. We need to be in the middle. The middle says you look at each individual defendant, each individual crime, and the often overlooked impact on the victim to determine whether or not someone needs to be prosecuted and put behind bars, or whether they can serve their debt to society in some other way, like a first-time nonviolent offender through home detention or community service.
Another massive crisis California is dealing with right now is fentanyl and its impact in so many different ways. Rob Bonta talking about this week. Real succinctly, what's your plan when it comes to dealing with fentanyl as AG?
Certainly. For over a year, I have been asking, begging Rob Bonta to finally do something on fentanyl. I'm glad he finally got around to a press conference to announce a future action on fentanyl. What I would do immediately is I would bring and lead, because I've actually led these task force myself, federal, state, local authorities going after fentanyl dealers and treating them as the murderers they are. This is not fentanyl overdose. This is fentanyl poisoning, because what they're doing is lacing counterfeit pills, OxyContin, Xanax, Adderall. And people are getting these pills thinking that they're really an OxyContin pill, taking them, and with 2 milligrams of fentanyl, you will die in 2 minutes. The DEA says 4 out of 10 of those millions of pills in California have lethal doses of fentanyl. So I would lead a federal, state, and local effort to go after the fentanyl murderers who are peddling their poison on the street, and couple that with a massive education effort going after the middle schools and the high schools, the students and the parents, to basically tell them that fentanyl is not about getting high. Fentanyl is about actual death.
And real quickly, how do you win this thing? Because no Republican has won statewide since 2006. You're running against a massive political machine. Rob Bonta has all the same consultants as Gavin Newsom. They all protect each other. How do you beat that?
Two things have happened in 2022 that have never happened in the last 20 years that basically say this Republican, a moderate Republican, will actually win this office. First, safety and security is polling as a top three issue among all Californians, Republicans, Independents, and Democrats. And we just saw in San Francisco, the most progressive city recalled the most progressive prosecutor, and of the 55% of the vote, 7/8 of it was Democrats and Independents. So people are frustrated across California. They're fed up. They're afraid to send their kids, their parents out in the neighborhoods at night. And Rob Bonta is the weakest Democrat attorney general candidate that the Democrats have fielded in 20 years. We had Jerry Brown, Kamala Harris, Javier Becerra. Say what you will about their politics, but everybody knew who they were. Rob Bonta lacks statewide name recognition. He has zero law enforcement compared to my 30 years of criminal justice experience. And he's enacted the most pro-criminal agenda in California Attorney General history. So I think if the voters actually ask themselves this question, who's going to keep you safe and secure for the next 4 years, I win that vote.
Lastly, let's have some fun. Last time you were on the show, we play this game called Personal Issues, where we learn your favorites. And you said that your favorite TV show of all time is The West Wing, which is my favorite TV show of all time. So we're going to totally geek out here. Who is your favorite West Wing character of all time?
All right. Probably a tie between Martin Sheen, because he's the president.
Bartlett.
And I like Toby.
Toby Ziegler, speechwriter and communications director.
Because they always gave him some great sort of philosophical lines when he was sort of stepping back and just sort of commenting with a kind of a wry, sarcastic wit. And then you had the president just, you know, laying out such clear, compassionate, intelligent policies. I think what I loved about The West Wing is that it was an intelligent show. It said, actually, what I want voters to do in this race, look at the people running. Yeah. Look at their qualifications and experience. Look at their agenda, what they want to do for California. And I think if they use the same intelligence that we saw in The West Wing to actually cast their vote for Attorney General, Nathan Hochman will get that vote.
Although, unlike The West Wing, you want them to vote for the Republican.
Yes.
They never did that on that show.
Yeah. We'll switch to the moderate Republican, but yes.
Okay.
And I do recall a moderate Republican or two winning on some episodes of The West Wing.
Our thanks to Nathan Hochman, and our thanks to you for listening to The Issue Is This Week. We encourage you to vote. Most everybody should already have their ballots mailed to them, and there are voting centers open in some places. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with a special sit-down with both Karen Bass and Rick Caruso. We're going to be talking to their families, doing a special about them at home. It's going to be unlike anything you've ever seen done on them before. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening.